I'm going to bring us to order. I do think we'll have a few more people come in, but it's my habit to try to encourage people to come on time by starting on time. It's the only way I know. Welcome to this morning session of Kosovo, Is There a Road Ahead? It's a somewhat gloomier title than I had hoped for at this stage in developments in the Balkans, but I think all of us have become a little bit concerned not only about the situation in Kosovo, but also about the situation in Bosnia and to some extent in Serbia and Macedonia as well. I'm very pleased to be able to present to you Lulzim Peci. And I usually say something personal about people, not from their bios, when they appear here. And I can't do that for Lulzim because I don't think we've ever met before.
No, this is the first time.
This is the first time.
Yeah.
Though I've heard his name for many years now, and the name of what I may mispronounce as Kipred for a very long time. And this is one of those Kosovar institutions that has not only survived, but in my way of thinking has thrived, at least intellectually, and has brought a lot of good thinking to issues in Kosovo. I'm very grateful also to Steve Meyer. Steve has the great virtue of bringing to us perspectives that we don't always hear, and that are stated bluntly and clearly, and I really appreciate his willingness to not only appear but to be his usual blunt and clear self. So welcome to Steve as well. He's spoken here many times, so maybe it's only a few, but times in the past. But he's also contributed in many ways to thinking by circulating his own papers and by sometimes not infrequent emails with me. We're very grateful, Steve, to have you here.
It's probably just a few, but it may seem like many to you.
Well, they are challenging. Let me put it that way, and helpfully so. This is an institution that regards itself as a big tent, and I hope we can maintain ourselves in that direction. We're going to hear from Lulzim first. Steve will then comment, and then we'll open to comments and questions from our participants. Lulzim?
Thank you very much, Mr. Server. Thank you very much for arranging this public event. I think that it is a right time to discuss again Kosovo, because we can consider this new country as a kind of unfinished business yet, and there are several reasons for it. We are on the eve of the first anniversary of declaration of Kosovo's independence. So far the country has been recognized by 54 states. As you know, majority of them are Western countries, but its independence is in one way or the other contested by Serbia, and this puts us in quite a difficult situation, despite the fact that Kosovo is recognized by all its immediate neighbors. Kosovo is still not a member of any international organization. So in terms of recognition and inclusion within international society, this is a kind of outcome so far. This is where do we stand. However, the current performance of international community in Kosovo, do I wait a bit while people are settled?
Okay, let's. Yeah. Maybe we need to get them settled. Are there more seats back there? Please come around, fill in as best you can. Come around this way because the camera's in the way that way. We got a full house.
Go ahead. Okay. Current performance of international presence in Kosovo to a large extent reflects divisions within the European Union regarding the country's independence. These divisions have several effects on Kosovo. First of all, let's start with the role of ICO, International Community Office, and EUSR, so European Union Special Representative. This is one person. His name is Peter Feith. He has two hats, one of ICO and another one of EU. But his hats at this moment do have conflicting political objectives. ICO supports the implementation of Ahtisaari's plan and independence of Kosovo, but on the other side, EU as such is status neutral as an institution towards as far as Kosovo is concerned. And this is creating problems in the field, because a part of EU mission is EULEX as well, EU mission for the rule of law in Kosovo. And this mission is supposed to strengthen the rule of law in the country. But a big question is, which laws will try to enforce this mission? So far, this is not clear yet how it will perform in the future, and in one way or the other, this is undermining the very aim and the very political objective of this mission, strengthening of the rule of law in Kosovo.
We still have one or two spots. Fill them in.
The second effect of EU divisions is undoubtedly encouragement of Serbia to disrupt consolidation of state-building process, increase radicalism in the north of Kosovo, and what is very much interesting, suppressing Kosovo Serbs who have moderate political attitude, and also community leaders who are willing to work with the authorities of Pristina. On the other side, the declaration of independence of Kosovo has directly affected the Albanians and Serbs and their fragile relations. Contrary to expectations, the independence has diffused the Albanian nationalism, and it has created a momentum for full acceptance of Kosovo Serbs as an integral part of society. Before the declaration of independence, it was a lot in media. People, different journalists, opinion makers were talking about nightmare-like scenarios, what's going to happen when the declaration will be declared. Many of them were thinking, okay, or giving their opinions that we will have again conflict in Kosovo, that Serbs will be driven out. But this didn't happen. In contrary, we have different path of social dynamics. Moreover, Kosovo's government has pledged to respect and implement the highest standards for minority communities, which is guaranteed by the new constitution. The new state, as pledged in the constitution, is inclusive for all communities and has a symbolic neutral to any community living in Kosovo, which is contrary to the prevailing regional nation-state philosophy. Just take a look what is around Kosovo. All states are built on ethnic-based symbolism. and they are undermining their communities by their symbolics in all our region. I mean, this is a pattern of state-building philosophy. Maybe Bosnia is a kind of exception, but the rest is different story. So states are actually, the philosophy of the state, of these states, is deeply rooted on ethnic belonging. Following the Declaration of Independence, three distinct groups emerge among Kosovo Serbs. The first includes political leaders boycotting Kosovo institutions, but at the same time opposing Serbia's policies. These community leaders and political leaders are mainly concentrated in the central and southern part of Kosovo, where the majority of Serbs live. The second group resolves around Kosovo Serbs political parties participating in Kosovo institutions. We do have two ministers in the government of Kosovo and 10 Serbian MPs in the parliament of Kosovo. And the third group includes political and other leaders directly controlled by the government of Serbia. And these divisions have generally manifested south and north of the Ibar River. So this is like a kind of dividing line of political realities in Kosovo now. And it's quite interesting because the northern part of Kosovo is remaining a battlefield of inter-ethnic incidents and is entering a new status quo because of quite chaotic reconfiguration of international presence in the territory. This reconfiguration, chaotic reconfiguration, happened due to the objections of Belgrade, lack of political will in Brussels, and obstructionist attitudes of the United Nations. I don't know how much you are familiar, but we have had in Kosovo very notorious regional administration in for the region of Mitrovica, Gerald Galucci, and he has caused a lot of problems even to the SRSG. Northern Mitrovica, where the battlefield is actually, it's very small territory, it's just 1.5 square kilometers. And we can ask ourselves, what is doing the international community? How it's possible not to solve this problem of 1.5 kilometers where the radicalism is concentrated so far? There are several explanations about it. First of all, that during the UN administration, the philosophy of UN presence was peacekeeping rather than rule of law, rather than democracy, and even state building. SRSG is very interested to put the flag of victory after their mandate and not to have big problems while they are in Kosovo, because their future career has depended a lot on their performance and how much they would be able like to keep things quiet in the country. So here we are. We had not a political will to settle this problem. In this part of Kosovo are concentrated Security Information Agency of Serbia, BIA, it's the acronym, then operatives of Serbian Ministry of Internal Affairs, and also Belgrade sponsored criminal groups. And what is doing this bunch of people? They are suppressing Serbs there. They are creating daily incidents, almost daily incidents recently. And they are suppressing moderate Serbs in the north. And they are not letting them to have any kind of cooperation with Albanians in the south. I can say that a single voice in the North and in the South right now is civil society. Civil society organizations are entering, they are very brave, and they took the courage to cooperate with each other. And this is a good sign for the future of this part of Kosovo. Also, the North has another problem. The region of Mitrovica that comprises Mitrovica South, Mitrovica North, and municipality of Zvečan suffers also from the consequences of deindustrialization. This part of Kosovo was very much dependent on the mines of Trepča, which is not working in full capacity, and employment has been dependent on the capacities of this industrial complex. And apart of having ethnic clashes, we have a severe social and economic crisis in this part of Kosovo, which also has become a fertile ground for the growth of different foreign Islamic groups, including Wahhabists, who are also using financial benefits for filling their ranks. But what is happening south of Ibar River, where the majority of Serbs live, around 70%? So far, since the declaration of independence, we have had not a single major inter-ethnic incident. And right now, in this part of Kosovo, we are witnessing freedom of movement that people couldn't experience, I can say, since maybe 1.5 decade ago. And what is, and most importantly, Serbs in this part of Kosovo are determined to stay and build their lives in the country. But they cannot freely express themselves politically and socially due to the Belgrade's pressure. And I think that the final aim of Serbia is partition of Kosovo along Ibar River. This policy cannot be explained differently. This is the final aim. Whatever politicians in Belgrade are saying, the situation in the field and how Belgrade is operating, I think that this is clear. And this project, political project, these goals of Serbia have to be prevented. Many diplomats, when we have private like meetings, they say, okay, maybe we have to save the face of Serbia, give them a bit of land and settle with them and have good relations in the future. But I don't think that this is a proper arrangement of face saving or whatever Serbia needs for the future. I think that Serbia has enough with the European perspective. Another thing that is happening in this part of Kosovo is a replacement of cadres with people who are coming from Milosevic's establishment, because Socialist Party right now is in power and they are controlling the Ministry of Interior in Belgrade. And these people are controlling right now mainly almost all parallel institutions there. And they are exercising a harsh pressure over moderate Serbs there and over ordinary people. What I'm talking, it's the things that we have faced in the field. We did the field research. We have spoken to many, many Serbs in the villages, in enclaves, and this is what we got there. Cadres of Milosevic are gathering village leaders, and they are saying to them that they have to obey to everything that is coming from Belgrade. But on the other side, ironically, Serbs who live in the central part of Kosovo are the best allies of Albanians for saving the territorial integrity of Kosovo. They do very much oppose this idea. And this is the irony of politics in Kosovo now. Because they know that if Kosovo is divided, if the north goes with Serbia, they don't see any kind of future in Kosovo. And since they have lived there and they have invested in their life, despite of hard times that they had after the war and for several years and with the riots of the year 2004, and these people, they're committed to live in the country. Right now they see themselves betrayed by Belgrade. And what is their mantra, actually? It's very interesting, the mantra of survival and mantra of prosperity in Kosovo. It's very simple. This is what they are saying. We will respect the laws, but will not recognize independence of Kosovo at this moment. And when people respect the laws, I think that this is sufficient for gradual inclusion within the system of any country. In the end of the day, people don't recognize states. It's states that recognize states. People are supposed to obey to the laws of any country. But on the other side, Kosovo's government has shown a lack of leadership, vision, and interest to use the momentum and create a ground for confidence-building measures, for a successful political process that will lead to the implementation of Ahtisaari's proposal, meaning here decentralization, and inclusion of Serbs in the broader frame of Kosovo society. Let me describe a bit my last sentence. What do I mean with it? People can live within a kind of legal framework, they can enjoy their rights, but if there is no vision for development of society, this will become very like fragile, very vague, and in the end of the day it will not serve to the future of the people. If you look at the youngsters in enclaves in Kosovo, these people live in villages. Actually, they don't, mainly in villages, they don't have a kind of a proper urban life that will move their mindset to a different stage. And for this purpose, Kipret has proposed, and I will explain later on in our recommendations, creation of the a kind of European university in the central part of Kosovo, because there is a Serbian university in the north. But this university should serve to both Serbs and Albanians, and to create a new generation of leaders, of community leaders, of political leaders in Kosovo that will build the society. We cannot build a proper and democratic society with isolated youngsters. And this is fundamental for the future of Kosovo. I'm very much happy because Kipret had a hearing session in front of a Parliamentary Committee on Foreign Affairs of European Parliament for this purpose. And this proposal is a part of a new draft resolution of the European Parliament, so we are very happy about it. And the last thing before I go to the strategy to explain what I think that should be done here is the problem with the international community. They are hesitating to support moderate Serbs in Kosovo. And this is very discouraging for them and for the future of Kosovo as well. I've been talking to Kosovo Serbian leaders and they feel sometimes very discouraged. They are going to the public. They are opposing the policies of Belgrade. They are doing everything what they can. They are threatened by Belgrade in different occasions. They have been threatened. And there is not a proper support by international community. We have to pay attention to this component. For solving this issue, like for trying to find the way ahead for Kosovo, as the title is of this public event, Kipret has proposed a twofold strategy for accommodation of Serbs within an independent Kosovo. First of all, the first strategic proposal is strengthening the Serb settlement south of Ibar River. And the key recommendation here is that there has to be a kind of shifting of Kosovo Serb center from the northern Mitrovica to Gračanica, or central part of Kosovo, where the majority of Serbs live, through the creation of a kind of a para-urban center in this part of Kosovo, establishing their Kosovo Serb television, secondary healthcare facility, and European University, as I explained a bit earlier. So this is the part that has to be done for the central and southern part of strategy for the central and southern part of Kosovo. For the north, we think that Atisari's proposal is not sufficient for having a successful integration of the north within Kosovo. That's why we have proposed a kind of phased solution that starts with the establishment of the rule of law. We are happy that EULEX is in the north already. We hope that they will perform, but this is basic. This is number one thing that has to happen there. Without having a rule of law in the north, we can dream about further progress. The second is implementation of decentralization. But for implementation of decentralization, we should have incentives for people to participate in the system and to be part of the new political life and new political institutions in Kosovo. For this to happen, we have proposed two measures. A trust fund for the municipalities of Mitrovica, South, North and Zvečan, which used to be in the past a single economic area, and it's a part of Kosovo which is facing the severe socio-economic conditions because of the Trepča industrial complex, which is not functioning anymore. And this trust fund has the aim of this trust fund is reconstruction and infrastructural development of these three municipalities, because nothing significantly happened since 1999 there, or I can say beginning of 90s. So this area has been left alone for some 20 years. And another measure is special investment area, which has two components: free profit tax zone and free customs zone. Free customs zone will be a very small part of the landscape, and we are proposed to be situated exactly where the borders of Mitrovica, South, North and Zvečan meet with each other. We believe that this strategy will provide the ground not only for meaningful integration and tangible future of the Serbs in Kosovo, but also for successful state building of the country based on European values. And we think that this strategy is a viable anti-partition and segregation project for Kosovo society. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Louis. And Steve?
Thank you. The first thing I have to do is, you will notice I work for the National Defense University, which is a Department of Defense-run graduate school, for those of you who don't know what it is. So I am there. My meager salary is paid by the taxpayers. And so I have to sort of give a commercial that what I say represents just my views and not those of the U.S. government. Before, when Dan said that my comments were often blunt, what I like to do is think of them as frank. And I don't know.
Stand corrected, Steve.
But my philosophy is, life's too short not to be frank and open and upfront. And then that's what I'd like to do today. I will keep this relatively short because I would really much prefer to have us engage you folks. It's encouraging to see so many people here. I guess the Balkans are back on the agenda after somewhat of a hiatus. Something, by the way, a number of us predicted would happen. Let me do this in three parts. I've read Luzin's work before. I've been on the website. I read his most recent paper. And I have heard him, obviously, today. He comes with a point of view and a very reasoned, rational position. I think there are some difficulties, however. Let me start with, first of all, with the first point and talking about some of what Luzum said. Not everything, because we can get into some of this in discussion. The radicalization and suppressing moderates in Kosovo and the Milosevic factor, it is true that the socialists are in the Belgrade government, obviously. I think that Kosovar Albanians tend to overplay the radicalization card a bit. Yes, certainly it's there, and it is there on both sides. There are what we used to call refuseniks on both sides. There are on both sides of this issue organizations and people who will never accept a political outcome, irrespective of what that political outcome will be. It is not one-sided. The radicalization of the North in particular, you cannot do that without willing audiences. And there certainly are people in the North and in the communities, I've spoken with some of them, who pressure people. But when you look at the few polls that I've seen, the overwhelming majority of Serbs do not want to be integrated into Kosovo. Kosovo, Luzum says, pledges to respect all communities and through constitutional guarantees. That's wonderful in theory, but in fact it's not happened. There still continues to be issues. There still continues to be violence. It is much reduced. That is true, but it is still a fact, and it is still a fact that many Serbs do not trust the government in Pristina to guarantee their safety and to provide economic opportunity. State building in the region is based on ethnicity. Absolutely correct. He's absolutely correct. But there's nothing wrong with that. If that is what people want, if people want their political community to be based on an ethnic principle, then it should be based on an ethnic principle. If they want it to cross ethnic lines, then it should cross ethnic lines. And the way to determine this is through a democratic vote. Luzum said possibly the exception of Bosnia. Again, I think a number of us are being vindicated by what's going on in Bosnia now. Bosnia is near collapse. Bosnia is hardly a state. It's a virtual state at best. And ironically, the most ethnically diverse country in the Balkans is Serbia, because of the number of ethnic communities that live in Serbia. it's not all roses, obviously. It's not all peace. There are problems. But the simple fact is that Serbia is the most the most ethnically diverse country in the region. The enclaves. I would take a slightly different view than that there is some sort of perspective that the Serbs in the enclaves are intimidated by Belgrade and simply want to live their lives in Kosovo, part of Kosovo. There's no question in my mind that there are elements in Belgrade that do intimidate. No question about it. But what is mostly the problem, I think, from the people I've spoken with in enclaves, is that they're going to be afraid. They're afraid to be sold out, and this is a point that Luzan made. They don't know where the future lies. They don't know where their safety lies. They don't know where economic development lies. So I think that's entirely correct. There's a great deal of apprehension. Need to give Serbia a face-saving way out through partition. I don't know who's saying this, but I would agree that that is not a reason for doing partition. I think there may be reasons for it, but certainly providing Serbia with a face-saving way out is not the right way. The Ahtisaari plan. I think it's really ironic. I've read the proposal. I followed it in some detail, and in my view, the Ahtisaari plan would lead to exactly the type of political community structure Luzan does not want, because what it provides for is a decentralized stovepiping community development in which Serb communities have contacts with each other and with Belgrade and can exist quite nicely without very much interaction with Pristina at all. So I think from the perspective of talking about a unified Kosovar state, the Ahtisaari plan is exactly the wrong direction to go, if that's where you want to head. The question of economic the economic development, I think this is somewhat overlooked, and I thought about this on a couple of times when Luzan was making his good his fine presentation. The economic situation, as we know in Kosovo, is so desperate. It is so bad that the prospect, you know, we can talk very nicely about economic development, we can talk about integrating Serb communities in the enclaves into the economy, but the economy, there is no economy. I mean, the most vibrant economy is either the black economy or the gray economy. So we're talking about huge numbers of unemployed. We're talking about enormous corruption and crime. We're talking about an economic project that is going to take decades to unfold. Furthermore, Kosovo has never been an economic unit divorced from a larger market. It has to be integrated into a larger market. There's no question about it. And when Yugoslavia was in existence, Kosovo, along with Bosnia, were the poorest parts of the country, because there was very little there. Kosovo is mountainous, it has hydroelectric power, the Trepča mines, as Luzan points out, are defunct. So the question is, how do you, on the ground, in a practical way, move forward with this kind of thing? When Luzan talks about a trust fund for municipalities, who pays for this? It certainly can't be paid for by Kosovo. Are we talking about the so-called international community, which is in itself a rubric for a few Western powers? So who pays for this trust fund? I think there's a lot of sort of devil in the details kind of issues. The second point that I'll make quickly is on Luzan's twofold strategy, and I've already commented to some extent on that. Strengthen the Serbs in the south. To try to move the center of gravity from north of the Ibar River to the south. Again, I think the problem there is one of the serious difficulty is one of the Serbs in those communities not trusting either Pristina or Belgrade. They feel abandoned, cut loose. The second problem is the very serious problem of economic development, which is essentially non-existent and will be non-existent for a very long time, unless this political problem can be resolved. And again, I said something about the trust. I think the same thing with the trust fund. With the trust fund concept, is not a bad idea. Economic development zones are not a bad idea. But we have to resolve the issue of political borders first, and we have to resolve the question of political community first. Now, there are people in my field in political science and security studies who argue that you have to do the economics first or you have to do the politics first. I think what history demonstrates is that it depends on the situation. It depends on time and place. And I think here we have to decide what the political community is going to look like first. And then we can get into the question of an integrated market, which is, I think, what we need in the Balkans is the integrated market. Okay, finally, let me give you a few of my own observations, not just what Lulzum, reacting to what Lulzum said. First of all, you know, he referred accurately to the ICO and USER and the difficulties in the field. That's like the tip of the iceberg that the Titanic faced. The question, the issue, I mean, just look at it, the issue of moving parts in Kosovo now is just staggering. It's confusing. And it is the fault of the West. Just look at it. You have ULEX, UNMIC, the application of the Komovo Treaty, which, by the way, Tadic is suggesting he may violate by moving troops south. 1244, Ban Ki-moon's 6 points for the north, which in essence have partitioned it already, because what Ban Ki-moon has done is essentially said different rules apply in the north, UNMIC rules, and ULEX rules apply in the south. The OSCE is involved as a consultative body, but it's more people and more talking heads. The ICO with the ICR, the International Steering Group, the Ahtisaari Plan, you have the equities of the ESDP involved. You have the question of how can USER represent the rule of law on the ground when we don't know what that law is, when 5 countries in the European Union do not recognize Kosovo. So what law? I mean, in effect, then, they do not recognize the constitutional authority of the Pristina government. So what does the EU do here? There's conflict between Feith and Pierre Mirel, the EU commissioner for ULEX, Kermabon. There is the question of the suit that has been brought by Belgrade against the international community. It's in the World Court for recognizing Kosovo. It's going to be 2 years before we have a decision on that. I think that was a strategic mistake on Belgrade's part. Some people think it was a brilliant move, but if they lose from Belgrade's perspective, they have nothing. They're going to be politically obliged to recognize Kosovo. And now Belgrade is threatening to sue the Netherlands as an obstructionist power. So we have got so many moving parts here, it's almost impossible to move, to manipulate in Kosovo. All right, the second point, there's a fascinating propensity on both sides, in Belgrade and Pristina, to pick the treaties, laws, and agreements to adhere to that they believe, that each believes, advances their own interests, and they ignore those that do not. And for example, you know, how do you interpret 1244? It's still in force. How do you interpret the Badinter Commission report from 1992, which says and binds European powers that the borders of a state may not be in Yugoslavia may not be changed without the permission of the state involved? How do you interpret the Helsinki Accords? All of these apply, and yet both Belgrade and Pristina play a zero-sum game and undermine their own people and essentially the progress of the region by adhering to those particular treaties and agreements they think advance their own interests. I made reference, I made reference to the zero-sum game. Neither Pristina nor Belgrade is willing to budge. Neither one of them will step back. Both of them insist on pursuing full bore their positions. Now, there are things going on underneath, particularly with respect to Belgrade. I tend to agree with Luzum that there are elements in the Tadic government that want partition and that want to move on. There are elements that do not. I've spoken to both sides in Belgrade. At this point in time, they continue officially to hold to this idea of some sort of the same thing that the Koštunica government held to, that what we're going to see, or what we should see, is some form of advanced autonomy. Now, that's not going to fly. Kosovo's not going to accept that, and yet they continue to cling to it. And I've said to both Tadic and Koštunica, you're crazy. I don't use that word. But you're not going to get this to fly. This is subterfuge. It's not going to happen. I said, you are going to have to talk to each other, and you're both going to back away from this. The fifth point, and this is one I think that's often overlooked, and it's also the fault of the West because of the way over 15 years we've approached this issue. This has to be a region-wide thing. The solution's got to be region-wide. We can't focus on discrete elements. For nothing more than the point I said before, Kosovo, Kosova has to be included in a much broader economic market. And it's not going to happen without a focus on a much broader, much broader map. So the map is much too narrow. In 1992, when my first CIA started working on the Balkan Task Force on this issue, we used to argue you can't just focus on Bosnia. Focus on Bosnia. You have to look at a larger map. What replaces the collapsing Yugoslavia? Not the discrete elements, but neither the Bush nor the Clinton administration would hear of it. I think, for example, you cannot say to the Republika Srpska, you may not become independent if Kosovo becomes independent. What's the rationale? We supported a referendum in Montenegro, but we won't support a referendum in the Republika Srpska. We won't support a referendum in north of the Ibar River. There's no logical rationale for that. What's the regional solution? And finally, you know, Olli Rehn recently said that 2009 will be the year of the Balkans. And the title of this session, Is There a Road Ahead? Of course there's a road ahead. It depends on what that road ahead will be. I think, very quickly, Kosovo has to be partitioned. I think it has to be partitioned because it will not work any other way. And I think that the enclaves in the south, this has been done many times in history, the people in the south either have to be given the money and the support to move out, or there have to be very strong treaty obligations by the international community to protect them, and then they can integrate the way Luzon wanted if they want to stay there. But we have to break that cycle of desperation that they have. At the same time, when you look at a region-wide perspective, we have to give other areas the right to vote on what kind of political community they want to be involved with.
Thank you very much, Steve. You fulfilled your promise to be frank and very productive of ideas as well. As says Luzim, I think we have a lot on the table. I'm going to open the floor to, we say questions, but frankly, this is a very well-informed audience. I realize some of you will want to make comments as well. That's fine, but make them briefly. It's not an audience that will respond well to lengthy interventions. Stanley.
And no vegetables either. Throwing vegetables.
We haven't had any vegetables.
Shoes are okay.
Stanley. Please stand up, Sammy, and introduce yourself. We don't have our usual microphone, so I'm going to have to do this the hard way.
Stanley Cover with the Cato Institute. We've spoken about the international community, the region, and so on. We haven't spoken specifically about Russia. Russia is a major player here, and Russia was very unhappy with the way it was treated. Russia is now throwing its weight around, both in Europe, with pipelines, and also with regard to us, take a look at the news about Kyrgyzstan.
Right.
So how do you accommodate Russia now in this situation? What do you think Russia's interests are? What do you think it will do? And how do you think we can respond?
Steve, I think that's in the first place.
Well, for Steve, then, I'll give let's
Steve the
American perspective, then Kosovo. Right?
I think, one, Russia's interests are not Kosovo. That's one quiver, one arrow in a quiver. It's you know, they really don't care that much about Kosovo. What the point is the rebuilding of Russian power. Russia once again on the world stage. You know, 6 years ago this wouldn't have happened, but now what we're looking at is primarily a Russian desire to be taken seriously as a great power, as a major power. They will use Kosovo, Kyrgyzstan. I mean, that news was, I heard that news this morning too. They will use the missile sites in the Czech Republic and Poland. They will use everything that they can. And I think that very much depends on how we respond to that. And the response so far, I mean, take a look at the Obama administration. What you essentially have are a lot of old Cold War hands in the Obama administration who come out of, you know, they've been in 3-foot hover in law offices and institutes and foundations around town waiting for their chance. Now the Republicans have taken their place in the 3-foot hover. But the point is, these are essentially people who continue to see the world in a dichotomous sense. It's them, us. And I think we should be well past that. But that's unfortunately how we view it, and I think we are going to react poorly to the Russian advances. Georgia was another part of it, of course. Russia is after being considered a power, and being taken note of and being taken seriously, and I think that we are going to see that, and we're going to respond to it, but I'm not so sure or so confident we'll respond in the right way.
Wilson?
First, I think that Russians' political objective doesn't match with the power of Moscow. Especially this economic crisis is making Russia to feel the pain. Yeah, if you just take a look over their budget for this year, for example, they have projected the budget to have to be, let's say, to get the revenues from the oil. I think that it was projected at like 60% or 70% to get the revenues from the oil. But they have projected the price of $70 per barrel, and the price is falling down. And they will have big problems this year in matching their needs, budgetary needs. I think that Russia is falling down, actually. This economic crisis has made Russia to fall down. They don't have the power, they don't have capacities to project their power that they are saying so. What they can do, it's like bargaining with Europe about the gas. The rest, I don't see any risk. Their military budget is equal to France. So, really, I'm not seeing Russia that much like a big power as it projects itself.
Thank you. Others, let me go to the back.
Economic development of Kosovo is only possible when it's integrated with the other economies in the region. So even like nationalist forces in Serbia admit that. And the question of borders will become redundant then. If people start earning money, they will probably not be so interested in drawing another border in the region. But you suggest petition as a solution or as a way to bring about or to make that economic development, regional economic development possible. Do you think that drawing another border would kind of provide that integrated regional market that we really need for Kosovo?
Now, that's a good question and a very valid point. And it's not the question so much of drawing another border, it's a question of moving it. Now, you know, this is a point that Western Europe really doesn't get. When I talk to Germans and French, you know, they've moved on in their history, their political history, to someplace else. When you remind the Europeans where they were 100 years ago, borders were bloody important. I think the problem in the Balkans is they haven't moved past the point where borders are still important. Borders are still very, very important in the Balkans. And my point is that we have to resolve that issue before then we can talk about development. Economic development. For example, let's settle the issue of political community, and then let's see what we can do on a cooperative basis with the Trepča mines. I have a good friend, his name is Nenad Popovic, who's an economist and businessman. I will meet him tonight. He's here for the prayer breakfast. And he has a very good idea for integrating, for economic integration in the South. But he can't move that until the political situation has resolved itself. And we are in such a nasty state. And Belgrade and Pristina are in such a position where they won't even deal with each other on an honest basis, that we can't resolve the political issue, the issue of political community. I'm not wedded to partition. I'm just trying to find ways that the concept of political community can be realistically resolved. And I don't think much of the rhetoric that we have heard resolves that issue of political community. And I think, you know, once that's done, then we start with confidence-building measures across borders. We start with integrating markets, much the way Tito did across provinces and republics.
Lucy, I would like really to respond to this, and I must disagree with you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, the idea of partition of Kosovo will kill the idea of Kosovo as a state. If this happens, then I think that the majority of Albanians will strive to join Albania, because almost 100% of people in Kosovo will be Albanians. What kind of political culture we are creating in the Balkans in this case? Because this will not stop only with Kosovo, it will go to Macedonia, Bosnia. So if you are talking about like a wide regional arrangement, personally I think that the time for it has passed. It could be an issue in 1995 during Dayton Agreement, but we are a decade late or even more. The time for this solution has passed. Secondly, as far as economic development is concerned, the economy of Kosovo is not dependent on the economy of Belgrade. Our economy is very much oriented towards European Union. 70% of our imports and exports are with the European Union, and only 8 to 10% are with Serbia. During these 10 years, the economy of Kosovo has taken a different path. We don't belong to that path anymore. The regional integration instruments for economy are already in place. It is SEFTA, and which creates a kind of framework for very good economic cooperation in terms of border regimes, tax regimes, and customs regimes. All countries of Southeastern Europe, I mean countries which are not part of European Union, have autonomous preferences trade autonomous preferences with the European Union. So all products from the region go to EU without any tax or customs provision there. So, and EU is trying like to encourage the development of the region. In terms of, in terms of assistance coming from European Union, even though Kosovo is not recognized by all EU countries, it gets the same, it enjoys the same financial instruments in terms of assistance like the other countries in the region, like Macedonia, for example. We use pre-accession instrument of European Union. So I think that too many things have been developed during this last year, since 1999, with the introduction of Stability Pact and Association and Stabilization Mechanism, that really the idea of partition right now belongs to the past. And politically it's not feasible. It will create much more problems than solutions. This is what do I think about it.
Please.
Hi, a question for Professor Meyer and then
Speak up.
Yes, Professor. Still on the issue of
partition. Introduce yourself first.
I'm Stephanie Larin with Voice of America. Still on the issue of partition, I wonder if you've spoken with inner circles in Belgrade and Pristina on the issue, what's their reaction? And
On the question of partition, I come to this as one part of a possible solution. It's not something that I would go to as my first choice. But when I look at the situation, and I've looked at the situation over the past 15 years, and I come to the realization that, man, there is no perfect solution here. That we have to deal with reality as it is on the ground. Now, in response to both you and to Luzim, I don't think any political idea is ever out of vogue. You know, it depends on what human beings want to do with it. And I think that, I was preaching this 10 years ago to the government, and they would not hear of it, to our government. Have I spoken to the inner circles in Belgrade? Yes. Some of it would be betraying our confidence, but what you get is, you know, frankly, what you get is honestly a mixed reaction. Officially, absolutely not. Because they still hold out the false dream in Belgrade that somehow they can have the whole province, which they will not have. It'll never happen. Some people that I speak with in Belgrade say, yeah, it's a way forward and we should think about it. So you get a number of reactions. But officially no. Now, it is just one part of a solution. As I started to say, you asked about the people further to the south, and Lulzim's right. Majority of Serbs live south of the Ibar. We have lots of examples, particularly in European history, where you say to minorities, look, again, dealing with reality on the ground, you are in an untenable situation, and you are going to be in an untenable situation for a very, very long time. Here are your choices. You can move, or you can become part of Kosovo and integrate into the state. If you decide you want to move, we as an international community, United Nations, Trust Fund, we will move you. We did this with Germans in Romania. We did this with Germans in the Czech Republic after the war. We did this with Poland. I mean, there's a lot of examples where this has happened. It has happened to some extent in Northern Ireland. It is not the best solution, but it is a solution for people to get on with their lives. For those who say, no, we want to stay and integrate into Kosovo national life, what we have to do then is say there has to be an internationally agreed to binding treaty on Kosovo, on the treatment, and there have to be observers in those communities for the sake of the of development. But it should be the choice of the people there to get them past the frustration, past the sense of being abandoned. They have to make the choice of the political community they want to live in.
Haven't they already chosen? See, life has been pretty hard for these people for a long time. Haven't they really chosen? Belgrade would gladly have paid for some of them to move north.
But there's no, I mean, a couple of things, Dan. I think there's been no concrete offer led by the United States and what we call the international community, which is essentially France, Britain, and Germany, and a few other countries, to say to them, look, if it is difficult for you, we will help you move. If it is not difficult for, I mean, if you want to stay, we will help you build your lives. We haven't done that. We have not done that. We haven't done that in any place.
Lucy, let me give you a chance.
Yes, but I would like first the colleague.
Yeah.
It might be true that over the last 10 years there's a shift in the economic relationships between Kosovo versus Serbia and then Kosovo versus EU. But EU is thinking in this economic crisis, and if investment dwindles, if you have your immigrant community return, not bring remittances, how fragile is the situation in this Serbian minority you have and you consider integrating south of the EBAR?
No, it's not integrated yet.
Strongly hit by that. How fragile is the situation? How much can the authorities in Burkina control it?
As far as economic crisis, first I'm going to respond to this, then I'll go back. Economic crisis didn't hit very much Kosovo. It has, we have faced some... Let me explain it. Yes, it has damaged a bit. We have faced losses of the pension fund, which the pension fund of Kosovo is invested in Western banks, so we have faced like a kind of 30% of loss of this pension fund for retired people. This is the first consequence that we are getting so far. In terms of assistance, economic assistance, it will not decrease because it's committed money by European Union, and the budget is approved for next 3-4 years, so we will not face any kind of harsh consequences from this crisis. Yes, remittances we will face because people will not be able to send money back again as they did in the past, but I think the situation is under control. But I would like to turn back just a bit to Professor Mayer. You have mentioned the trust fund. I can tell you the trust fund for Mitrovica right now, it's not only an idea, it has started to be implemented. Many donor government donor agencies and multilateral agencies are giving money to this fund, and UNDP has taken the lead actually to be a kind of donor coordination body for the fund that we have proposed, just to tell you that things are moving in this direction. Mm-hmm. Serbs in the southern part of Kosovo, these people have suffered in 1999 and 2000. There was a violence in Kosovo after the war. But these people were determined to live there despite a very harsh situation that they had in the beginning. Situation has been improved, and these people are committed to live. They in Kosovo, they know that they will live in Albanians. Being it, what kind of framework it is, they will, their neighbors will be Albanians, and they have to live with Albanians. In their mind, they live in Kosovo. I don't think that these people will permit to leave Kosovo, and I'm going to tell you it's another issue here. And I'm glad that you have mentioned that politicians in Belgrade, in essence, they do want to partition Kosovo. They cannot say it publicly.
Some do.
Some, but some. The policy in the field is more or less, it's going, I mean, it's pursuing these aims. But what I'm trying to say here, because the loss of the moving people, Serbians from the central and southern part of Kosovo, it will have further consequences for Serbian mentality and Serbian, let's say, national conscience, because all significant monasteries and Serbian cultural heritage from the Middle Age, it's not in the north, it's on the central and southern part of Kosovo. I think that this would mean much more for Serbs, I mean losing it completely, not even having Serbs living there, than people that they would live. And I think that you have to take into consideration this factor as well. Really, I think that this will not work out anymore.
State Treasury, Christian State Department. Three real quick related questions, and I'm speaking just with my own personal academic curiosity.
Right.
One for Stephen and two for Ruslan. Stephen, I was intrigued when you were talking about ethnic-based states not necessarily being a bad idea. Leaving aside whether that's good or whether it kind of promotes ethnic chauvinism, how would you have a poll on that in Kosovo when in November 2007, for example, the election, Serbs were basically ordered by Belgrade not to vote, you know, and intimidated?
Right.
For Luzum, on decentralization, I'm intrigued by your plan on the north, but how would you kind of incentivize decentralization in the south, particularly with the complications, the parallel structures that Belgrade funded municipalities down there? And then finally, just I'm not sure if this is a glimmer of hope or if I'm being too optimistic, but I saw in Jivan, I think it was, after several days of no electricity because of technical failures, they both major ethnic groups started to talk about how to start paying for electricity in the future, not, you know, leaving aside the arrears. And I was impressed by the fact that there wasn't, you know, a violent outbreak after that incident. I wonder if that's a good sign.
Losing first and sniff.
Sure. Thank you very much. The Ministry of Local administration actually has started the dialogue with Serbs since like 6 months ago, but it's very quiet dialogue in the southern and part of Kosovo, the central and southern part, about decentralization. The ministry even has spoken to the people who are elected by the elections of May organized by Serbia with parallel structures about it, and some of them have participated in some unofficial meetings organized by the ministry. So the process actually has started. Consultations are there on the ground. But I think that the ministry of and the government of Kosovo has to offer extra incentives for confidence building measures for people to participate in the system. Okay, we can do municipalities, we build municipal buildings, we give them budget. But this is not sufficient, because people have actually should not have doubts for their future. They should see that the government of Kosovo is their friend, that the government of Kosovo is their own government, and that government of Kosovo takes care about them. And I think that is fundamental for using this momentum, this very fine momentum for the future of Kosovo. And this can be achieved. We need political will, and we need international support for it. This can be achieved, I'm sure about it.
Steve,
so this is what...
Your question on... it's well taken on the question of referendum and votes. I think what Belgrade has opposed, rightly or wrongly, has been Serb participation in elections that support a Kosovo state and a Kosovo political order. What they, I think they would not oppose would be a referendum on where Serbs in the north particularly would, you know, what political community they want to be a part of. I mean, it's whose ox is being gored. So I think that they could easily support that. You know, part of this is based on the fact that, you know, history is important. Borders in Europe and certainly in the United States have never been sacred. And part of the problem is we are so hung up on the on Tito's borders, you know, in the Balkans. I mean, why is that border drawn where it is? It's drawn where it is, and it has moved over time. And there's no reason it can't move again. It would it depends in sort of in a democratic world, it depends on where the people want to live. And quite frankly, our government and the governments of Europe have not adhered to democratic principles when they have attempted to help the people in the Balkans construct their futures, or really more impose solutions on their futures.
Let me take you.
Okay, my name is Sarsim. I'm from Baltimore. I'm originally from Kosovo. For you, Mr. My question, as an Albanian, I am for partition. But what's the criteria? Have criteria. Now, are Serbia going to pay compensation for Albanians who were expelled during the before Second World War, 50s and 60s to 30s? Then are we talking about correction of the border with pressure, whether the Albanians are not?
Right.
Then what is the basis about Serbs inhabited in Kosovo? How long you go? Are they only because living last generation as a Serb official in the government, or they were there forever? Albanians were in Balkan much longer than Serbs. There you're talking about partition of Bosnia, but Serbs don't mention about Sarajevo, where Muslims are majority. There you talk about money. Remember, you know, a lot of people don't know it. Yugoslavia in 1990, before breakup, had like $11 billion foreign currency reserve. No Eastern Europe bloc had that money at that time. In December of 1990, Russian export $1.5 billion cash. No one talks about that. And now about Kosovo, we can talk about based on Constitution 1974, that Kosovo has right for self-determination.
Let me turn to Steve first.
Yeah, you raise a great point. How far back do you go in history to determine these things? And I don't know the answer to that, but I think what Pristina and Belgrade have to do, perhaps in the context of an international conference, is come to grips with that kind of issue. It's a very important issue. As far as the Preševo Valley, again, you know, if my principle is to, if I take my principle seriously, certainly. One has to consider where the Preševo Valley would be, but one also has to then consider the Republika Srpska. And this goes back to a point.
The Republika Srpska began in prison.
Pardon?
Going by 1991, census, then what?
Yeah, okay, I mean, but the point is, we have, in the West, we have attempted to impose solutions on situations without considering these major issues. And we are now reaping a lot of havoc because of it. Lilsum talks about losing the north of the Ibar River might mean the collapse of Kosovo and joining Albania. I mean, if that's all that's holding Kosovo together as a state, then maybe you better consider another option. The question of where Albanians want to be as a political community should be something that Albanians vote on. It should be a democratic decision, not something imposed.
Lucy.
Yes. I'll go back a bit to Serbs in Kosovo again. When Serbia organized these elections in May last year, the elections of Serbia for municipal elections, less than 40% of Serbs in Kosovo voted in these elections. And it tells a lot. It tells that Serbs in Kosovo are not trusting Belgrade. I'm not saying that they are trusting Pristina, but they are not trusting in Belgrade. This I did like to mention. I don't like really to further discuss about the idea of partition, because I think that it's uncivilized, first of all, and deportation of people, it's something very much unacceptable for me. I think that it's outside of the framework of Euro-Atlantic values.
Avni. No, please. Avni.
Avni Mustafa with the...
Avni, will you stand up and...
Why
maybe even face backwards a little bit.
Avni Mustafa with the National Albanian American Council. Obviously, my question is to Stephen Meyer. You gave us a pretty dour prescription about what's going on in Kosovo, but I would also have to mention that on February 17th of this year, the country becomes 1 year old. So this notion that there's no economy, how could there possibly be an economy? And that it's the black market and the gray market, well, that's what's ruling the whole region. And so in terms of it having to be a regional solution, it's a regional solution for every one of those countries, because they're all little countries that need to trade with each other so they can have a viable market. So So in terms of a regional solution, the countries in the region have spoken, and besides Greece, the rest of the countries in the Balkans have said the only solution for Kosovo is independence, and every one of them has vehemently spoken out against partition for all the reasons that everybody here gave, and that it will just destroy a lot of work that has been done up until now. And suddenly now you have all these other questions. Well, if you're going to run polling Albanians or Serbs where they want to live, then you can just run around the whole world and just start polling enclaves of people and say, hey, by the way, where would you like to live? And then we could do that here. You know, so we could have little Italy in the Bronx and say, well, we want to live in Italy. Well, all right, then you can have a little Italy here. So I think the notion of partition really becomes extremely destructive. And I think Nazim, I think, made a good point that it's really unrealistic to even talk about it, because you will simply force the Balkans to go back. You will not solve Belgrade's solutions in terms of being a part of the European Union. And if the pressure were put on Belgrade to stop interfering in Kosovo, then the Kosovo Serbs, who according to an NDI poll, a majority of them have already accepted their reality in Kosovo. They may not like it, they may not agree with it, but they've accepted the fact that their future is going to be in Kosovo. So I'm not sure if there's a question in there, but
yeah. I got you.
Steve?
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, you're probably right, but we don't live in an ideal world. And I think that there are a number of political leaders in the region whose livelihoods and whose positions are staked on the status quo. The economies of the whole region are not very good. I mean, Kosovo is an extreme example, but the economies in the whole region are not very good. And it's not going to be solved by immediately by European Union membership, which is not going to come for many of them for a long time. The second point I would make would be that in a practical sense, a partition's happening. Little attention's paid to the concept, but Ban Ki-moon and his six principles essentially cemented it. Partition's happened. When you have essentially ULEX in the south and UNMIC rules in the north, it's a reality. And all I'm suggesting, you know, again, I'll say, as I said earlier, it's not something I'm wedded to. I mean, I've been watching this region for a long time. What I'm struggling to find is are solutions that accommodate reality on the ground, strong ethnic preferences, the fact that we've never, ever seen borders being sacred. They are political conveniences that are established for a variety of reasons. And the point is to get past that and to get on to where Pristina and Belgrade can cooperate. And you talk about pressure on Belgrade. That's a Kosovar Albanian speaking, and I respect that. But that's not going to happen. And even if they do pressure Belgrade, no Serbian politician that wants to keep his job is going to buckle under to it. And that will drive Serbia deeper into their position. It will not bring them out into a cooperative position. When you talk to Tadic, when you talk to Vuk Jemerik, these guys cannot afford to bow to the pressure of the West. They'll lose their jobs. That may not be bad, but you will drive the Serbs further underground, not bring them out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's again this issue of partition. If we are talking about the principle and jobs, I think that we have a problem then. So if they don't like to abide to a principle because of keeping the jobs, I think that there is a problem, in Belgrade. Really, I think that this idea is outdated and it has no future. What we have been told in the region during the last 10 years, invest in multi-ethnicity. All our political projects and all people have transformed their mindset towards multi-ethnicity. I'm talking at least about Kosovo and Macedonia and Montenegro. So it was a huge investment there in people's mentality, in educating people about the new future and the democratic future, which is based on basic values of Euro-Atlantic community. What we are trying to do with the partition and all this idea is, it's to destroy the very fundament of our values and our societies. We don't need new borders without values, without any human values, which are the values of exclusivity, and in the end of the day we will create Nazi or fascistic societies by trying to have everywhere like national exclusivity. I think that this is an idea which cannot be accepted, first of all, from the human point of view. As a human being, I cannot accept it. Well, Serbia has problems. Fine, fair enough. I must agree very much with the article of Mr. Daniel Server and Mr. Abramovic, the recent article. Serbia is a problem. Serbia has to put a mirror and to look to itself. They should cure themselves from their problems, because they are not able to actually to face the past. They are not able to take any responsibility for what they did in the past. If you don't take responsibility for your deeds, unfortunately you cannot be cured. And I hope that the new administration, the new U.S. administration, is a new momentum for changing things in the Balkans. And what I'm meaning here, how I'm viewing it. First of all, the Balkans needs the new transatlantic, strengthening of the transatlantic alliance for the stability in the region, which doesn't exist yet because of divisions within European Union. A few countries which have opposed the independence of Kosovo, namely Spain, if you talk to their diplomats, they say, okay, we did this because of Basque country, but we were angry on Bush administration as well, because the relations between Spain and Madrid are frozen since Zapatero came to power. So I think that Spain, for example, is full of hope right now about the new administration. And this is, I think, a momentum to try to create a new era in transatlantic relations for the stability of the Balkans. If you don't create this, if you don't strengthen, transatlantic community is not united for the Balkans, the problems will continue. And Serbia will be encouraged to move in its cage and to treat the others as mad, while itself it's in the cage, it's mad. So this is what I can say.
Luzin, let me thank you for bringing to us a set of ideas about Kosovo that would lead to better integration. Steve, let me thank you for bringing to the table very clear ideas, frankly stated, about that see the solution more in the direction of separation and eventual reintegration. I think it's been a useful discussion of those issues, and I share with Wilson, I'm sure Steve does too, the hope that the new administration will have a fresh look at this situation and try to get some momentum behind the peace-building process in the Balkans. Thank you very much.
Thank you.